Blog Talk Radio. What, what, oh. What,
hello. Hello, and welcome. Masonic Effects. We are well into the holiday season as much as we can conjure that up, given all of the circumstances going on around us. Just a pause. We're not here to pretend that the conflicts happening, the sad shape of accountability. It's growing. We're not here to pretend that that's not happening, but this is simply a pause, a step back, a moment to take a deep breath and be reminded there is more to what's going on than what the media is sharing with us, because it's being manipulated. We know this, but no cynicism. That's just a... And there are, it's not so much, we can choose to look at the world as if in terms of the forces and the powers that want to manipulate, or we can be what we are and welcome. I say welcome to all of the, everyone who's bended the knee, as the Game of Thrones called it, bended the knee at the altar and took those oaths. We choose to not be overwhelmed by adversity. It's not that we rush toward danger. We step back and try to understand how the danger occurred, and then we fix that. And in the meantime, we'll make an effort to help the people that have been damaged. The innocents, people who are affected by circumstance. And it's that strong sense of compassion that helps bring us, that brings us together so often. We have an enriched psychology going on around us, as we know. Every time we turn on a bit of social media, there's always a plug, some ulterior motives, not just to entertain, it's to entertain, but to always sell product of some sort, a hand in your pocket. Except we know how to operate an off button. We know how to be selective. When we go out into our environment, we look at it selectively. We're alert to things that reinforce the, I don't know if the word is really goodness. I don't know if that's really the reality, and is the reality what we make of it? Well, I can, you know, if those darn hermeticists are even close, which I think they are, and I think the physicists are catching up with them, then all of this is in our mind. All of it. That's pretty interesting perspective to put on things, isn't it? If somebody's half baked, they're going to ball up right about now. They're going to ball up their little fists and be charging around, being rude and belligerent, and all that type of thing, and feeling quite justified. Except it makes if we did that, we would all feel foolish. We're making fools of ourselves. You call it what you want. But we could invite him to stop doing that silliness. Come and join us for a croissant and a nice double espresso, huh? And some conversation. And maybe invite him to sit down at our chessboard or backgammon board and pass away a bit of time and get to know each other a little better and find out where's this. Where's this intensity coming from? That something that has affected our friend so strongly that he feels the right answer is to become completely unpleasant, just to be obnoxious, and that somehow is justified. Well, apart from tearing away at his soul, at the fabric of what he is as a man. He doesn't deserve that. He doesn't deserve that. So sit down with us. We'll listen. What have you to say? Oh, exhausting week. Do you ever have I suspect I'm not the only one. This has been a wonderfully exhausting week for all good reasons. I think it all adds up. I want to make an effort. So, and you help me. An effort not to be ever saying what you must do, not chastising you for your particular properties or your particular perspective on the craft. If I do that, my goodness, it's unintended. And please let me know. It would be something I would never want to impose on anybody else. I've been talking over the past couple of weeks. I've been sharing with my mates the need to be jealous about what we have, not to be here where I am. There's been this sense of welcome and unrestricted access to the craft, and we've done pretty. I have to admit, the reputation of the craft has been off-putting for a lot of scoundrels. The odd one slips through, but not. I must admit, the effectiveness is quite remarkable. We've shied away from this. We've interpreted our judgments as somehow a criticism of an unfair criticism of another person. An assumption that he has nothing to offer, and that we ought not to be questioning and reasoning. And I have been trying to help our brethren become comfortable with the idea of being jealous about what we have. And we have decisions to make about, we have assumptions. We have to examine these assumptions. Is it reasonable that that Freemasonry really is something suitable for everybody and anybody? Now that's one assumption. The other assumption is we ought to screen very carefully to look for compatibility. Man, I think that's a very interesting proposition. Much more healthier than the first one, but then what are the variables, what characteristics would we be looking for? And that, of course, requires the reasonableness and the judgment of our Committee of General Purpose, our lodges, to have that discussion. My lodge circled the chairs and address that issue, and then came up with whatever our conclusion was, and we were fine with it. I could not imagine trying to impose that on you. You have different chemistry, similar, yes, similar purpose, but such a unique perspective, that combination of perspective. And yes, I know there'd be some. Immaturity in the crowd. You have to be prepared for that. The fellow that hasn't been taught as a boy not to try and impose his wonderful, charming personality on the room. There's always that, especially here. I don't mean to necessarily poke fun of. I want to laugh it off because it's taken so seriously. Unfortunately, over the top, and where that is becomes a matter it's a source of irritation that is tolerated instead of resolved, and I find that very interesting that we have this toleration for something that I don't really see it's productive at all. And I'm not talking about, I'm not going to get intrusive and talk about self-loathing and that type of thing. No, no, no. That happens. But those are things that I don't think really add to the performance of what we're trying to achieve. And I don't think that it's asking too much to ensure that we preserve. We're a bit jealous about the coming into the craft and into our lodge, and that it give a person a moment to reflect. If you're just a silly, if you're rash, why would I want you around a lodge? But do I just be rude and insulting about that? I don't think. I think this is where I think the judgment isn't thumbs up or thumbs down. This isn't the Colosseum, for goodness sake. This is like now or not now. Think about it. How many times have you been tested and learned from the test itself and learned volumes from the test itself? How many times have you walked into situations where you weren't sure of the criteria? You learn from those. And did it go well? Well, people are looking for, have an agenda, and it's hidden. You don't know what that agenda is until we become so old. And then it's like nobody does that to you anymore because you don't allow it to happen. You know, you just don't. Is one of those effects of masonry on the likes of me. I realize I'm a rationalist. The authority, and I have been for a long time, authority, arbitrary use of authority is no use, absolutely no use around me. If the situation is self-explanatory, you know, of course. If it's not clear, then it needs to be clear. For anybody to assume, and does that mean I'm going to try and force my way with authority? I'm not that stupid. You learn how to handle authority. You do. You just get it, keep them chattering away and doing what they do. If authority is overstepped, it will always, if it becomes overbearing, it tells you that there hasn't been enough accountability. That's just sort of a general rule of life anywhere, in any situation. And I only say that because I've not seen an exception to that rule. And I don't know what Greek philosopher said that, but it probably might have been a Roman philosopher. Authority without accountability always becomes overbearing. So if it's overbearing with you, now that's something you can fix. Because people don't like these rogues running around saying and doing whatever they want. No. So we represent accountability. Be careful with that. You know, keep that a bit keep those cards closer to your vest, and it gives you a way of thinking through these unfortunate situations that occur. Now, I say that it's like, there's a difference between practicing, being around the courts and the law system for what I will call legitimate reasons, or purposeful reasons, performative reasons, and being dragged in front of it because you've been just an absolute scoundrel. I don't have much. I have more experience with one than the other, you know. So you get, and like you, I take these opportunities to observe and learn. Good show today. I hope you will know. I try to emphasize life in the moment. I'm still becoming more and more shy of photographs. Because it's just a souvenir of something that is over. It's gone. It is truly more important to be in the moment with you and not be trying to pretend that I can live in the past or that somehow the past has left me. It never leaves you. My goodness. Or that I've lost something because I don't remember every detail of everything that I've ever done. That all that OCD stuff. No, you live in the moment. Good show today. Good music, and with a bit of a Christmas theme. The poetry today, normally I would read to you a poem and with explanation. This is not going to have one. I'll leave this to you to find the reasoning. About because I don't want to, I find it could and probably and it might risk the harmony that we have when you sit down here, and I don't want to do that. The poetry itself is beautiful. It is truly beautiful. I'll leave it to you to explain it. Other than the inspiration of poetry. I think that's a legitimate topic. always a legitimate topic. Why do we appreciate? Why do we benefit from the detail of poetry? It tells us, you know. In fact, I must say it helps us to understand our culture better. And the human condition and our own condition. And it's an odd little thing, an odd little thing that we do. But before I blather on anymore, let's share a bit of music, shall we? There we go. You've heard that before. And sit back and relax for a little while. And we'll try and inspire the Masonic juices and bring them to the forefront. This is a little Terry Clark and Jim Hall and Rasmus Lee. Thank you. Yes, I'm in the north. Lovely. I've a few days ago went through quite an interesting experience in a lodge with some wonderful, wonderful people, wonderful Masons, and it was. There was just a joy in the room, a spirit in the room, lots of smiles and goodwill, and it still affected me even now, I must admit. And I only say that because I've realized that I have no interest at all in being remembered. None. To be perfectly honest, I have little interest talking about the craft as a noun, masonry as a verb, the catalyst of creativity is far more stimulating, don't you think? Once in a while, I put on apparel that reminds us of the specialness, reminds me. I make those special efforts, bringing as much elegance as I can, as we can, to our event. There's always some bunch doing things differently that are more attractive. We are, after all, an audacious, aspirational bunch. Like builders before us, we have an eye for new techniques, new design and engineering. Those vaults and flying buttresses were genius. So we made them part of our work, too. Bring the dignity with you. Bring elegance to the meeting. Don't concern yourself. Your preference will always be an influence that appeals to others when it is right and reflects all these unspoken comments. Living in the moment is a curious experience. It's liberating to accept that we only live in the moment. That yesterday and tomorrow are just imagination. When you think on it, can you create magnificent Masonic experiences that have principles at the core? Can you do it unintrusively? You practice it when we're with each other, but we prove it when we walk out that door. The ability to listen without judgment, to speak less so that you can focus on what others are saying, to observe in silence. Think about how much you learn when you're still. These are unusual traits to exhibit in our world. Unusual, except they're not so unusual for the likes of us. These are behaviors men write about, yours for the taking. Imagine a world without cameras where a memory is a memory, where things of importance today fade into the vitality of today. Imagine quietly understanding and not feeling a need to tell it to the world. That's called confidence. You will be mocked for it, but you will also make a difference when by your carriage you enter a room with grace, attending to your guests, hearing every word. I'm going to take advantage of you again. I've done that in the past. Just reminiscing a bit. We're heading up to, if not today, yeah, we've hit our, we've been at this 11 years. We're now starting our 12th year of Masonic Effects. My goodness. Thank you. I know some of you have been around for a while. Thank you very much. We've maintained some relevance. It's kind of nice to know. And indulge me just a step further here. The poetry. This is our poetry corner on the Sonic Effects. Yeah, and I guess it's not to be pushy. It's just to be, you know, it's like I'm one of those people that will walk along at your side and ask for your opinions. I want you to teach me. I know my own opinions, you know, but I'm always fascinated. I've always been fascinated by information and that other people have. I want to know their opinion because it helps me sort out my own. And it isn't a competition. I find rightness and wrongness often it's a matter of perspective, isn't it? At least in my world. Yeah. I'm going to talk today about a detail. I think poetry sharpens the mind. At least our ancient brethren respected it that way. And when we look back through history, we can certainly begin to we have reflections. We can begin to reflect. Why was Coleridge and Johnson and Keats and why are these people? Why is their work and Shelley? Why is it so resonant today, or Shakespeare's work? When you hit it, when somebody understands the human condition, they understand the human condition, and they share it with us, and there's some satisfaction connecting with that person. It's like, oh my goodness, he or she experiences something that I hadn't ever talked about. So just briefly today, we'll convene in a week. I think we're getting close to the Saturnalia season, and yes, we are, and the solstice is past or coming. No, it's coming, and Saturnalia and all that all of that fun. And I want to think just for a second. I don't mean to be maudlin. I want to think, remember, all the women and men that are away from their families this time of year in some conflict zone, representing politicians that would never pick up the weapon themselves or drive the tank themselves, they'd never do that, but have convinced themselves and us that there's a need to go and murder some people. And we're always able to instill that madness. You know, there's always somebody that will legitimize it by coming up with their own army or their own pushback for their own reasons. Yet we are the influence, ladies and gentlemen. We are the influence. So I want to just extend. It doesn't, to me, the uniform doesn't matter. It's that this is always young people, always. That face the loneliness. Oh yes, they're brave. They have to be brave when they're with their mates and they have tasks to perform. They have to. Yeah, have to be that focused. We know that. But they also have to sleep and try and settle the thoughts and stop the nightmares. And we know that too. So for those, I want to recognize and respect that that's part of the world that we live in. Yeah. It's like this. It's like, listen, my subject is war and the pity of war. The poetry is in the pity. Those were words written in 1918 by Wilfred Owen. Just a couple of weeks ago, we showcased Wilfred Owen's poetry. Remember? He died. He was killed in the battle zones. This is his words in 1918, drafting his preface to the collection of, he didn't live to see published. My subject is war and the pity of war. Why? You can let it sink in. This is a poem. I will tell you the writer's name. The writer's no longer with us. He's a professor. Rifat Akarir. And it's, the poem is, If I Must Die. If I must die, you must live. To tell my story, to sell my things, to buy a piece of cloth and some strings, make it white with a long tail so that a child somewhere in Gaza, while looking heaven in the eye, awaiting his dad who left in a blaze, and bid no one farewell, not even to his flesh, not even to himself, sees the kite, my kite that you made, flying up above, and thinks for a moment an angel is there, bringing back love. If I must die, let it bring hope. Let it be a tale. I get the feeling he was writing a poem that could apply to all people everywhere. If I must die, you must live to tell my story. And life goes on, hey? Just remember those, not so much what the media wants us to believe in, you know, the propagandists, they're going to do what they do. It's what they're paid for. But Cedar Walton and Ron Carter, that guy, Stanley Turrentine. History, you say? Do you have any history to share with us? Yeah, as a matter of fact, I do. Thank you for asking. We're closing in on the end of our material, our story on the living the Enlightenment through the exploits and progress of lodges in and around Amsterdam and the 18th century, and talking about the social context, things that have changed going on in Europe that are impactful. The work, of course, is looking at how Masonry was traveling out of Britain, the British style, and how that was affecting the Dutch Freemasonry. Let's just be sure to remember the English style was not the only style. And it fills a lot of literature, but it was not it's not the complete story. And so if you're dead set on 1717 having tremendous significance, put a little asterisk beside that. There's a backstory that's quite compelling, I think. We're talking now about we have been talking on the show about the happenings outside when you think about it, it's quite remarkable that the people's revolts were going on, and it was so strong and powerful that these monarchies in other countries began to calculate that if it happened there, it could well happen here. It's a lesson that governments who are around me would be, that are quite smug in North America, would be advised to attend. The change was happening. Entropy, that overbearing, overbalance of greed and power, all of those things do have a reckoning. History shows us that. And if anybody is trying to convince us, as it's been done before, convince us that there is an omnipotent amount of power in you and I don't have it, that's been said and tried so many times before. And it's never stops it from happening, but the reaction is becomes almost clinical, because it's news. Instead of it happening, you think this work was happening without moment by moment media feeding an exchange of information and opinion. It wasn't like that. You took the belief and ran with it, literally. Here, our author brings us a kindness and a bit of an insight that I think it relates to what we see going on around us today. Yeah. Interesting enough. Two phenomena, she says, were most visible in the lodges of late 8th century provincial France and Strasbourg Freemasonry during the 1770s and 1780s, illustrates both. First and most noticeable were the dissensions, bordering on internecine struggles within and between lodges. These generated anger and hostility far beyond what the circumstances seemed to require. Some of the emotion was local in origin, but a major source of irritation emanated from the actions taken by the Grand Lodge of Paris. The anger and hostility was particularly evident around after 1773 and the formation of the new National Grand Lodge, the so-called Grand Orient. Through renewed centralization, which we will examine in later, it sought to impose order and social hierarchy within the Masonic nation. In the process, it ran afoul of many lodges. among them some of those we are about to visit in Strasbourg. The second of the phenomena visible in Strasbourg Freemasonry in this period was a new and strident rhetoric, much of it published by anonymous brothers, which voiced profound and general social discontent and proclaimed a radically reformist approach to the meaning and purpose of the Masonic state. In its most applied form, the new approach found in some Strasbourg lodges spurred them to create societies or clubs intended to apply Masonic wisdom to societal ills. But there were distinct limits to the movement for reform. For the most part, the discontent and impatient impulses remained confined to the sermons of the Strasbourg orators or to new societies created by the lodges and demanding noticeably high membership fees. Note, for instance, the tone of one orator. The light of this century was revealed to us that man is depraved, and it is society alone that is the source of this depravity. Put another way, man is exhausted by the fetters of high society and searches for particular associations to enjoy there the charms of liberty and virtue. The Mason is a free man, proclaimed the orator, and he sacrifices a portion of his indefeasible condition in order to obtain the advantages of reunion with his brothers. Anyone who would exercise a despotism in the midst of this liberty would be an evil brother, encroaching upon the liberty of the Mason, and in the process depriving him of a sacred patrimony. These fiery sentiments were being expressed in a provincial city. Strasbourg was hardly Paris. Fortunately, the documentation left by its Masonic lodges reveals a great deal about the values and beliefs of a variety of provincial men and some women from different classes or estates, and with different, although no less reformist, visions about what the light of the century prescribed. Speaking in the same lodge, the Strasbourg orator in 1777, whom we just heard, explained that Freemasonry had arisen in the born in a climate hot and effeminate, had also been nurtured. Freemasonry was its antidote, the disease to be cured. Despotism was here associated with the effeminate and with medieval feudalism. It seems we do repeat history when we don't learn from it. Different or similar, or who cares, more of the same. It's interesting. I just find the coincidence interesting. And that here we